Exodus in the Old Testament, chapter 2. We dealt last night with the action of Moses' parents, father and mother. You need to read the record in Exodus 2 compared with Acts 7, the message of Stephen, and Hebrews 11, the so-called heroes of faith, and less so-called cast an aspersion. It's called that because they are heroes of faith. Where we learn that they hid Moses, defying the edict of the king to slay all the male children by faith. Too hot in here. Not just parental love. Faith. It was the fourth generation. By word of mouth in the slave huts it had been passed on that they were in Egypt because Abram had asked God in Genesis 15, "How will I know that the promises you've given me will come to pass?" And God gave him an answer, outlining a series of events that would last over 400 years, that would demonstrate God's control over history in a way that was statistically impossible. The result should have been that once this 400-year pattern ran by and the set time of deliverance came and God led them back to the promised land, they never should have doubted again. It's a sort of sick kind of comfort to learn that people who have lived through God's control and guidance and care to the degree that these people will be seen to live through it and can still doubt. Exodus in the Old Testament, chapter 2. We dealt last night with the action of Moses' parents, father and mother. You need to read the record in Exodus 2 compared with Acts 7, the message of Stephen, and Hebrews 11, the so-called heroes of faith, less so-called cast an aspersion. It's called that because they are heroes of faith. Where we learn that they hid Moses, defying the edict of the king to slay all the male children by faith. Too hot in here. Not just parental love. Faith. It was the fourth generation. By word of mouth in the slave huts it had been passed on that they were in Egypt because Abram had asked God in Genesis 15, "How will I know that the promises you've given me will come to pass?" And God gave him an answer, outlining a series of events that would last over 400 years. That would demonstrate God's control over history in a way that was statistically impossible. The result should have been that once this 400-year pattern ran by and the set time of deliverance came and God led them back to the promised land, they never should have doubted again. It's a sort of sick kind of comfort to learn that people who have lived through God's control and guidance and care to the degree that these people will be seen to live through it and can still doubt. I guess misery can take comfort when we find ourselves doubting. But don't doubt to the degree they did, because God finally is going to turn on them. But it is the fourth generation. And the promise to Abraham, the proof that God would keep his word, was that his descendants would go to a strange land, become slaves there, and in the fourth generation would be brought out again richer than when they went down, and would be brought back from that place to the land where the promise was first given to Abraham. And I ask us, and had only one goal last night in asking the question, is your lot any more hopeless from the standpoint of sight than the lot of Moses' parents? And I asked you to envision last night, put flesh and blood on the Bible. It must have been pretty tough, because all the other parents, according to Stephen in the New Testament, because of the evil persecution, gave up their children. By faith, Moses' parents hid him. By faith, they took him to the river, the very river of death that Pharaoh intended to be the source of destruction to the babies, and cast him onto God's care. God floated him right into the heart of Pharaoh's daughter, and as I said, made Pharaoh himself, give him room, board, and education. And Pharaoh's daughter paid. I just love the way God gets down to the nitty-gritty of money. Gave Moses' mother wages to nurse the child. They had nothing. Now, what is faith? Action based upon belief, sustained by confidence in a promise that God hath uttered. The only reason that they did what they did was they believed the promise. 400 years had passed. Fourth generation was here. They looked on their child. He was a goodly child. Why not their boy? Why not their boy? It's a long jump from that little helpless baby in their arms and hidden for 3 months and in that ark of Papyrus or papri, glued together with slime and pitch. And the man that would stand one day and stretch forth his rod and say to the people, stand and see the salvation of the Lord. And as he stretched his arms with the rod in hand forth, the Red Sea would roll back. That little baby in that ark's a far cry from the man that would stand one day and with his rod smite that flinty rock, and water would gush forth to bring life to 3.25 million people. That little babe in that ark is a far cry in appearance of sight from the one that's so valuable to the plan of God, that Satan and Michael will contest over his body. And Michael, under God's power, will take him to bury him in a place that no man knows. Maybe bury him. Nobody knows if he's buried. That baby in that ark's a far cry from the one that would stand on the Mount of Transfiguration in brilliant new life to to give succor to Jesus as he will leave that mountain. And on the mountain is talking of the decease that is to come and the cross that he must bear. And I believe that baby in that crib is a forecry from the one that will be one of the last two witnesses spoken of in the book of Revelation to do the last mighty work of witnessing before the doors of tribulation close to work their final work and Jesus comes to clean this whole earth up. But to them, God had said, it's the fourth generation, a deliverer will come, and why not this baby? That's what faith is. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, the grabbing of a promise of God and making it a title deed for the possession. Now, God could have delivered Egypt with 75, one angel. He didn't need 75. But when God said times come, he always is going to work through chosen individuals down here. And these people that had heard the promise of God whispered in huts, coming home in a hopeless condition in the natural, bathing the wounds from the lash of the taskmaster. As I said last night, never hearing of a 40-hour week or an 8-hour day, their real work began in those precious moments where they could exercise faith. And Pharaoh gave him board and room. The child grew. And it came to pass when Moses was grown, he went out into unto his brethren and looked on their burdens and spied an Egyptian smiting an Hebrew, one of his brethren. And this is where we ended last night. 40 years old now, mighty in word and deed. If you read Josephus, a great warrior for Egypt, returning home, winning a great victory, destined to rule the throne, but identified with his... Now, I'm returning to Exodus 2 as we go past the half hour. That means one more song for you to make your telephone calls. Area code 818-240-8151. Collect calls from anywhere in the world. In continental United States, use the 800 number, 1-800-338-3030. Or for a free copy of the magazine, call or write Dr. Gene Scott, Post Office Box 1, Los Angeles, California, 90053, United States of America. Tallahassee, Florida, picking up 1610 AM. I'm visiting my brother in Tallahassee, Florida. My home is Lima, Peru. Please send me your Truth magazine and the book you are offering. Be glad to. Brickport, Connecticut. Picked up 1610. Just want to let him know. Kensington, Connecticut. Windsor Locks, Connecticut. Center Reach, New York. New Haven, Connecticut. And Victorville. All picking up 1610. All qualified to get the free copy of the Traditions of Glastonbury. Moses looked this way and that way, and when he saw there was no man, he slew the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. Well, why didn't God go along with him? That Egyptian needed to be killed. You've heard me say 1,000 times, God's not near as interested in what is done as he is why it's done. When he runs out of the margins of time to get his job done, he has the power to turn up the heat and see to it that it's done. I said last night, I do not understand, and I do not think anyone will ever be able to totally understand, because God will not be put in a box that denies him freedom. The relationship between God's sovereignty and the expressions of freedom that he expects from us. I just know that he starts the process. No man comes to God save the Spirit draws him. He has set times. And until that set time arrives, he has a lot of play in the lines as he works with those that have opportunity to get in line with his purposes. As the set time arrives, he's going to get it done. It is obvious that he preserved Moses. But as I said last night, would it have been wonderful if it had two or three of them? Would it have been wonderful if a whole host of families had had the faith to try to save their child? As I said last night, don't ever underestimate the power of what you can do when you act in faith. The biggest problem I have is people sitting and looking at their one talent and deciding to bury it. Over and over I've said, every opportunity of faith, we challenge the devil in that warfare and get out of our foxhole and act like the whole war depends upon you singly and alone. You cannot do for anyone else. You can only do your best. Now, I want you to notice something. God could have, right then and there, Moses' attitude and desire regarding the will of God and his choice of sides was right. Just like Jacob is to be commended in terms of his attitude toward the birthright of God versus the way in which Esau spurned it. But he went about trying to achieve it in his own strength. Here's Moses. He's on the right side. Why didn't God just go ahead and send a couple of angels to help him out and just clean the house right then and there? Moses was trained in all the wisdom of Egypt, mighty in both word and deed, not yet trained sufficient in faith. He's a look of this away and a look of that away. Man going by sight. And when you're a look this way and look that way kind of operator for God, you're going to end up in fear. He went out the second day, and behold, two men of the Hebrews drove together, and he said to them that did the wrong, "Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow?" He's still on the right side. He's a pretty good referee. Every word he said was true. He's worshiping the fairness syndrome. "Wherefore smitest thou thy fellow?" He had a better understanding of brotherly identity than the two Hebrews fighting together. But the one he spoke to said, "Who made thee a prince and a judge over us?" Stiff-necked idiot. Moses was right. This Israelite should have said, "You're right. We shouldn't be fighting with each other, considering the common enemy." But no. "Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? Intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian?" I've met people like that in every church you've ever been in. Doesn't sound to me like they're worth delivering. And they aren't. At that point, God's not going to do it. simply for them. He's going to do it because his word's at stake. They weren't in Egypt because God was particularly mad at them. They weren't even in Egypt for their sake. They were in Egypt because Abram said, I want proof. So God gave him proof. Best illustration in God's book that it's better not to ask God for proof. Get yourself 400 years of misery. God was doing this for his word's sake. And Moses, having looked this way and looked that way, and done in his own strength what he thought needed to be done, ends up opposed and feared. And he ends up in fear. He says, surely this thing is known. This guy knows it. Everybody knows it. And he was right. Because Pharaoh heard this thing and he sought to slay Moses. And Moses fled. Every time you look this way and look that way before you act, you're going to end up dominated by fear and fleeing. And he fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian and sat down by a well. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. They came, drew water, filled the troughs to water their father's flock, and the shepherds came, drove them away, but Moses stood up and helped them, watered their flock, and if the first book of Cecil B. DeMille beat the way out of them. When they came to Reuel, their father, he said, how is it that you're come so soon today? They said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and also drew water enough for us and watered the flock. He's on the right side, he's well educated, now he proves he's a gentleman. Plus the fact he's more than just a gentleman. He's a courageous, courageous gentleman that beat the bullies away. And the Egyptian said to his daughters, where is he? Why is it you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. Smart dad, I mean, guy delivers daughters like that, but there's so many of them to marry off out there on the backside of the desert. Don't let this one get away. I mean, the ones he drove away were the samples of what was available. I've raised myself one dumb bunch of daughters. Let him get away. Why is it that you've left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. Fools. Get to him through his belly. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. Moses keeps making the right decisions. And the father gave Moses Zipporah, his daughter. He's a fast mover. She bare him a son. He called his name Gershom. For he said, I've been a stranger in a strange land. And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died. Let me check something for you. Let's read Stephen's record of this. When he was full 40 years old, it came to his heart to visit his brother and the children of Israel. Acts chapter 7, verse 23. And seeing one of them, this is the sermon being preached by Stephen before his stoning as the first martyr. New Testament, Acts 7, verse 24. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them. But but they understood not. And the next day he showed himself to them as they strove, and would have set them at one again, saying, Sirs, your brethren, why do you wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, Who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Wilt thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday? Then fled Moses at this saying, and was a stranger in the land of Midian, where he begat two sons. And when 40 years were expired, there appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai an angel of the Lord in a flame of fire in a bush. Now let's go to Hebrews. Chapter 11. See how much time they spend with this subject. I'm working with a Bible tonight that's fallen apart. By faith, verse 23, Hebrews 11. When he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents, because they saw he was a proper child, and they were not afraid of the king's commandments. By faith, Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. I want to come to that later. Back to Exodus 2. Now there you have the record from the three primary sources. And it came to pass in the process of time, second chapter, 23rd verse, that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried, and their cry came up unto God by reason of the bondage. And God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And God looked upon the children of Israel, and God had respect unto them. And then in the third chapter we come to the burning bush. I said, I don't understand the relationship between God's sovereignty and the element of freedom that we must exercise, yet I know both facts exist. In some cases, God exercises more sovereignty. In other cases, he waits for us to take action. God, through Jeremiah, had prophesied that the bondage in Babylon in later years for Judah would last 70 years. Daniel, seeing from the books and knowing that prophecy, began to intercede with God and pray that God would end the bondage and let it go no longer than 70 years. God not only answered that prayer, but then gave to Daniel a vision of his people for 70 weeks of years. Again, in this case, Moses went out in his own strength, used the look of this way and look of that away approach, failed, feared, and fled. God still had some training to do with Moses. At the same time, God's people had to be brought to a point where they would begin to cry unto God and claim the promises from God themselves, or cry out for his help in the midst of their troubles. I've told you the thing I miss the most about my dad is his prayer life. And as we go on with Secret 5, I hope that you come not only making your commitments of faith, but come having prayed and adding that dimension of the effectual, fervent prayer of those made righteous by faith, that God will take that which we do and turn it to his glory as Secret 5 takes off and becomes reality. God was on time And in the fourth generation, there was a family of faith that looked at that babe in arms and said, why not him? And while God was training Moses in the desert for 40 years, 40 years he was trained in all the wisdom of Egypt. Now he's trained by God on the backside of the desert for 40 years. And he's now 80 years of age. And the Pharaoh has died in Egypt. And the people now begin to cry out and groan and pray. God's in control. He has everything working like the fabric of a Persian rug. History is watched by him, and the web is woven, or the pattern is woven. And everything is working together, as Romans 8:28 says, God enters into all things. That's the literal, to work his good. He lets Moses have the failure that will cause him to flee, that God might train him on the backside of the desert. He times the departure of Pharaoh, and the groanings of God's people will now come at a time when God's delivering instrument, Moses, is ready. Third chapter. Now Moses kept the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law. That's just a name, excellency. The priest of Midian, his priestly name versus the other name that was given in the previous chapter. And he led the flock to the backside of the desert and came to the Mount of God, mountain of God, even to Horeb. Horeb was a mountain chain. Sinai was a mount within the chain, a high peak. And the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. Moses said, I'm going to turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. Dry acacia wood bush on the backside of a dry desert, burning and not being consumed, that made me turn aside too. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called unto him out of the midst of the bush. Now remember, we read these passages and they go by so fast. My dad just passed away a short time ago. He was 84. That's a long time to live with health and vigor. Moses was 80 at this point. He had spent 40 years in the wilderness, in that dry, mountainous region, tending those sheep, learning from God, 40 years. How long do we wait for God to restore us to Channel 30? What was it, 3 years? And there were several times I could have killed God for waiting that long. You know what I mean. How long do we wait to move back downtown? 5 years? 4 years? Well, if we keep having false starts, first false start, or failure, or setback, whatever you want to call it, an attempt of faith that seems to be frustrated, or an attempt, at least, of effort that seems to be frustrated. Everything looks right and we're acting and God seems to not be there to help. Three years to get 30 back, 4 years to get back downtown. I don't want another setback, because then we'd wait 5 years, another setback, then we'd wait 6 years, another setback, then we'd wait seven. though there were times I wasn't as sure of it as I sounded. I still practice what I tell you to practice. If you've got a fingernail grip on God's promise, you don't let go. I kept saying God would enter in and reconstruct, and He did. I kept saying God would enter in and reconstruct, and He did. In both cases. I've sat here and taught you that when you've done all that you can do, and it looks like the way is blocked, just pick up the pieces and start over. God will reconstruct. And He did. Where did I get that? From this record. And others like it. Faith cometh by hearing, hearing by the word of God. 40 years had gone by. That's a long time to wait. After, and according to Stephen, Moses was well aware of his calling. And he thought his brethren would understand that he had come to deliver them. And he got slapped down. There is none of you that have ever tried anything for God anytime, anywhere in your life and failed to achieve that which you thought and were so sure would happen, that have had to wait as long under as tough a conditions as Moses did. These things are written for our example. Well, I started tithing and went broke. And I mean, it's been 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 20 years. I still haven't got on my feet. Promise is the same. Prove me now herewith. You just keep doing it. Some people, you ask them to get up and testify what the Lord's done for them, they'll jump up and say, He ruined me. That's what He did. Any of you been waiting on the backside of the desert for 40 years? Now, you've heard me say this before, when that bush appeared. You've got to give Moses this much credit, even though his later questionings. He turned aside to see it. He knew what it was. There's no way Moses didn't know this bush didn't burn. God was present. I'll give him credit for not saying to his sheep, let's get the hell out of here. And I want you to notice something. I've said this to you before. God out of that bush did not say after these 40 years, and there's no record that God said a word to him for 40 years. He didn't say, hey, shepherd. He didn't say, hey, you over there. He said, Moses. He knew exactly where he was, and he knew his name. God has not abandoned you just because you don't see shimmering lights around you all day long. God has not abandoned you just because you've been walking in darkness with no light for some time. The calling and the gifts of God are without recall. And He can run from Egypt in fear and flee the Pharaoh in disgrace. All the time, just shortly before, looking this way and that way and trying to deliver God's people and then being hurt because it didn't go his way. 40 years now on the backside of the desert, and when God gets ready to move, He says, Moses. He knows his name. He knows right where he's at. God's not going to let you get away from running away from His call. Sorry. Sorry. You can't hide from him. You that have been called to any ministry, including this one, I'm going to say what was said in the New Testament to Paul. Why do you keep kicking against the pricks? Why do you keep opposing? Why do you keep resisting? Would you rather be left alone with your sheep, rocks, and you're crying in your soup, or start on the path again that one day will let you stand on Transfiguration Mountain with the Lord Jesus Christ? This congregation needs to return to faith. And God's calling you by name, and that's that feeling that you have when you respond. Quit looking this way and looking that way and get on board. Get on telephone.